Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
The master Sozan said, "The great way is not difficult for those who have no preference. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind." Now, Sozan was known as the third Chinese patriarch. In India, you know, there were the 28, the 28th being Bodhidharma, who came to China. And Sozan is the third. Bodhidharma, then Ika, who was a Bodhidharma's student. You know, he was the one that stood in the snow while Bodhidharma was sitting there with his wall gazing. And then he finally, Ika cut off his arm to show his sincerity. Or that's the way the story goes anyway, and I wouldn't hold too much truth to it, you know. I mean, after all. But this Ika evidently was a very quiet, unassuming man. He was very well educated. And after he had been made the second patriarch, he went around preaching. And one day when he was preaching in a very important city on the meaning of Zen, he caused a lot of confusion in those who were listening, those who could not rise above the letter that killeth, you know, the spirit giveth and the letter killeth. So there was another teacher there in town who heard about him and about this crowd that had gathered around him. And this Dokhan was a very well-known teacher, and he had about 1,000 followers. And he decided he'd better find out what this man was all about, so he sent one of his trusted disciples, you know, to this Zen man to find out what kind of an individual he really was. And when this disciple, this trusted disciple, learned what the teaching was all about, you know, this from this so-called heretic, you know, he was so impressed that he was converted to Zen. So Dokhan sent another disciple to call the first one back. But he followed his predecessor. He too was converted to Zen. So Dokhan sent another and another and another and another, you know, all the same result. And it was years later when Dokhan happened to meet accidentally on the street this first disciple, this first messenger. You know, he asked him, "How was it that I had to send for you so many times and you didn't come? Did I not open your eye with so much effort on my part?" And this former disciple looked at him, you know, and he very simply, as you can see this little Chinaman standing there, he answered, "My eye has been right from the first, but through you it came to squint." So, and needless to say, this Dokhan was not very pleased And it came to pass that Ika had a great deal of persecution. And so it happened, I mean, and so the emperor even, you know, started persecuting Ika and the people in Zen. And it happened again one day that he was in front of a temple speaking, and people left the temple to come and hear him. You know, there's a huge crowd gathered. And this high priest of the temple was very angry over the situation. And he accused this beggar monk, and, you know, it's written that he was probably in rags. You know, he was a wanderer, a beggar, you know. And he accused him and sent the authorities, and Ika was arrested and put to death. Yeah. And he didn't plead innocent or anything. He just composed himself, and they killed him. And this was in about 593, and he was 106 years old. So they say. I mean, we take all this with a grain of salt, don't we? Yeah. Now, Ika didn't write anything in particular. He didn't leave any writings. He didn't write a book or anything like that, essays and pamphlets. But after he died, his sermons were all collected, and they found a few letters. And a lay disciple had, by the name of Ko, had written to Ika. And it's quite famous, and it's really worthwhile. This Ko had written, "Shadow follows a body, and echo rises from sound. He who in pursuit of the shadow tires out the body does not know that the body produces the shadow. And he who attempts to stop an echo by raising his voice does not understand that the voice is the cause of the echo. In a similar way, he who seeks nirvana by cutting desires and passions is to be likened to one who seeks shadow apart from its original body. And he who aspires to Buddhahood, thinking it to be independent of the nature of sentient beings, is to be likened to one who tries to listen to an echo by deadening its original sound. Therefore, ignorant and enlightened are walking in one passageway. The vulgar and the wise are not to be differentiated from each other. Where there are not names, we create names. And because of these names, judgments are formed. Where there is no theorizing, we theorize. And because of this theorizing, disputes arise. They are all phantom creations and not realities. And who knows who is right and who is wrong? They are all empty. Who knows what is and what is not? So we realize that our gain is not real gain, and our loss not real loss. This is my view, and may I be enlightened if I am at fault." This is this letter, Ko. "And Ika answered him, saying, 'You have truly comprehended the Dharma as it is. The deepest truth lies in the principle of identity. I'm going to repeat that. The deepest truth lies in the principle of identity. It is due to one's ignorance that the Mani jewel, now, the three jewels are the triune body of the Buddha, which are the Dharmakaya, the Sambhogikaya, and the Nirvanakaya. Hmm? And it is said that one who knows the wisdom of equality, the wisdom of equality is said to be the jewel possessing one. Right, okay. It is due to one's ignorance that the jewel is taken for a piece of brick. But lo, when one is suddenly awakened to self-enlightenment, it is realized that one is in possession of a real jewel. Now, real for the first time. Huh? The ignorant and the enlightened are of one essence. They are not really to be separated. We should know that all things are such as they are. Those who entertain a dualistic view of the world are to be pitied, and I write this letter for them. When we know that between this body and the Buddha there is nothing to separate one from the other, what is the use of seeking after nirvana as something outside of ourselves? Now, after Ika comes Sōzan, the third Chinese patriarch. And he came to see this master Ika. He would have to, otherwise he wouldn't have been made, he would not have been handed the bowl and the robe. Huh? So, and Sōzan at that time was about 40 years old. And he said to Ika, I am suffering from a fengyang, which is translated as leprosy, which again we take as a grain of salt, you know. I am suffering from fengyang. Please cleanse me of my sins. So, and Ika says to him, well, bring your sins here and I will cleanse you of them. And this man stood there, closed his eyes, and he probably looked all around inside of himself, you know, for a while. And finally he said, well, as I seek my sins, I find them unattainable. I can't find them. See? Oh, I have then finished cleansing you altogether. You know, you should thenceforth take refuge in the Buddha, in the Dharma, and in the Sangha. You know, and the Buddha is the essential fundamental nature, and the Dharma is the way it functions, and the Sangha, of course, the brotherhood, that which is enfolded in it. Now, this little last little story is very similar to one that Bodhidharma used when Ika came to him. Ika came to him and said, you know, my mind is all in this turmoil, you know, would you please pacify my mind? And Bodhidharma said to him, well, bring me your mind and I will pacify it. So here stands this, you know, looking all over inside himself, where is this mind? I got to bring in my mind, so he's going to cleanse it and purify it, and where in the world is it? And he says to him, I can't find it. And he says, therefore, I have pacified your mind. Yeah. You betcha. Anyway, this little story goes on, and Sōzan is still talking to Ika. And he says, as I stand before you, I know that you belong to the Sangha, that is the brotherhood, but would you please tell me what are the Buddha and the Dharma? And this Sōzan said, mind is the Buddha, and mind is the Dharma. And the Buddha and the Dharma are not two. He doesn't say one, that they are one. They are not two. And the same is to be said of the brotherhood. They are not two. I mean, it's like when we talk about the triune body of Buddha, you know, the three aspects, the way it functions, the way the essential nature functions. You know. They are not two. what it is and what it, how it functions are not two. If you want to take it over into Christianity, we also have a Trinity in that, huh? And it's the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. And the way it functions. And they are not two. You know, when Jesus said, I and the Father are one, they are not two. Yeah. Anyway, this statement of Ekos satisfied Sozan. And he said, well, today for the first time, I realize that sins are neither in the middle, neither are they within nor without. Just as mind is, so is the Buddha, so is the Dharma, and they are not two. Now, not very much is known about this Sozan either. He didn't leave anything in the way of writings like Ika did, you know. He just mostly remained as a sort of a wandering monk, always moving on. And, of course, this was partly due to the persecution of Zen at that time. However, and this little thing is quite famous. You know, these old patriarchs said some wonderful things. He had this disciple by the name of Doshin, who asked Sozan, you know, please show me the way to deliverance. You know, show me the way to liberation. Show me the way to being free. To which Sozan replied, well, who has ever put you in bondage? Yeah. So, but most of his life, Sozan's life, is very obscure. But he left a poem in which he presented his way of thinking, and it's called the Shinjin Mei, which is translated as inscribed on a believing mind or heart. Hsing, H-S-I-N, huh? In Chinese means mind, it means heart, it means soul, it means spirit. It can mean any of these things, and it can mean it all together, inclusively. So inscribed on the believing Tsing. Your soul, your mind, your heart, your spirit. Yeah. Which begins with the perfect way knows no difficulties, except that it refuses to make preference. Only when freed from hate and love, it reveals itself fully and without disguise. A tenth of an inch difference, and heaven and earth are set apart. If you want to see it manifest, the great way, huh? If you want to see it manifest, take no thought either for or against it. To set up what you like against what you dislike, this is the disease of the mind. And when the deep meaning of the way is not understood, peace of mind is disturbed and nothing is gained. And it goes on and on and on and on and on and on. It's a long, long poem. Now, these words, this poem, I think is quite important, and I think that it has impressed a great many people. They come out of a mind which has gone beyond just words. They're not speculation. He's not speculating, well, it could be this or it could be that, and building this mental structure and saying this is, no, direct from the source it comes. And they stem from his experience with that source. He knows. He says, this is the way. He's a very wise man. He is one who has really penetrated into the mystery, so that when he speaks, we should listen. And we should listen in a silence, you know, setting aside the chattering mind. You let it chatter some other time as it will. As it will, as it will. Mm-hmm. As it will. Yeah. There was a man at one time, and he was hauled into court, and he was charged with polygamy. He had many wives. And in some countries, that's a no-no. In some countries, it's a yes-yes. And in countries like Tibet, why, it is the women that have many husbands. You know, like the story of one who had 12 husbands. So each one took a turn at supporting her 1 month out of the year. You think that's a pretty good system? I got two of them over here that do. Yeah, I mean, they tended the garden. And, you know. Anyway, about this particular one who is accused of polygamy now, everybody seemed to know about his wives, but no one could prove this polygamy. See? And his lawyer said to him, "You remain silent. You just shut up, huh? That's all you have to do. Just shut up. You know, if you say one single word, you're going to be caught. So you just keep quiet. I will take care of the matter. You have hired me to take care of the matter. Let me take care of the matter." Yeah? And so the man remained silent. Underneath it all, you know, he was boiling. Oh, he was in a turmoil. And there are a lot of times when he wanted to, that's not the way it is. You know, he wanted to interrupt. But somehow or another, he managed to control himself and his tongue. And the court couldn't find anything against him. They couldn't prove anything. Even the judge knew that he had many wives. But what could he do when there's no proof? You know. So they released him. And the judge said to him, "You're free to go. You can go home." And the man stood there a minute, very puzzled, and he looked at the judge and he says, "Your Honor, which home?" See? One word. One word. One word shows your state. One word and you're exposed. You know something? If you're observant of yourself at all, one word, you are exposed even to yourself. If you would just look. But we don't. Look at the next word that comes into your mind. You know, to other people, even when you're silent, you know, your silence reveals your state. Because there's this boiling going on inside, this turmoil. But when somebody like Sosan speaks, it's quite different. Because he doesn't speak from this chattering mind. And he's not trying to convince you of anything. He's not trying to convince you of a theory or a philosophy or a mental structure. It's just that when he speaks, in him the silence blooms. And he would just like to share with you what is with him. So we listen from the heart. Because the thinking it never ever is going to truly understand. It always cuts it short. So, and then you try to hear what he means and not what you mean. You don't say to yourself, "Oh yeah, I know what he means. He means this and he means that and he means the other thing," which simply is an interpretation. If you really get what he means, oh, and you don't say he means this, that, or the other. It's just this insight that has no words. What you say to yourself what he means is an interpretation, and that's what you're going to be stuck with then, that squint in the eye. Yeah. It's like this monk who was coming back from the party, and he was quite inebriated. Drunk. Yeah? And it was early in the morning, the wee hours, as they say. And he had to pass a cemetery on his way home, and he noticed there was a sign hanging up there, you know, on the gate. And for some reason, he'd never ever noticed this sign before. But he went up to read it, and in big capital letters, it said, "Ring for the caretaker." So that's what he did. And of course, early in the morning, the caretaker was very angry. And he came staggering out of his sleep, and he saw this monk who was very drunk, and you know, and he was even more angry. He says, "Why? Why did you ring? Why did you ring for me? What's the matter? What do you want?" And the monk looked at him, and then he looked at the sign, and he says, "I want to know why you can't ring that damn bell yourself." Ring for the caretaker. See? How something is interpreted is up to you, isn't it? Huh? That was his interpretation. That was his squint. Yeah. Now, a healthy mind is a mind that is not divided. That way, if your mind is not divided, you can pick up a rock and you can touch it and you feel it. And you can become one with a rock. Samyana, they call it. Yes, indeedy. Or you can one day, usually in March, you know, we have these blue skies and the white clouds, and they seem to move across them, sometimes like they're having fun, and sometimes it's you know, there's a kind of a majesty about them because they're so white and huge. Huh? You see them moving across the sky, and you just keep quiet. Maybe you lie down and watch them. And you become silent. And little by little, you become more silent and more silent. And only the clouds are moving, you know, because it's like you have become the sky. The sky has become you. There's no longer boundaries. There's no division. There's no dualism. Just these clouds moving through. Something will happen. So there are times when we should forget about Aristotle and his logic. You know, Aristotle's logic says either this or that. Choose. If you choose, you're in a trap. Yeah? Because now you got something for and you got something against. When the four enters, the against follows as its shadow. You know, if you're against something, then the four follows on its heels. You don't get away from either one. You may think you do. That's the trap you're in, the squint in the eye, huh? When you choose, you divide. This is good, and that's wrong. It's a division. It's no longer a healthy mind. And life, after all, is a unity. Existence remains not divided. Only our minds have these fixed compartments for and against. Fixedness, you know, erroneously sometimes we call it stability of the mind. Our little boxes of for and against. Yeah, that's the nature of the thinking mind. But if you didn't have these boxes, then there would be stability. I mean real stability that you couldn't mow down. Yeah. Because there is a fluidity to life. What are you going to do with life? There you are. What are you doing with it? You can't choose. I'm going to be for this and against that. You know, if you want to be life, then you have to be choiceless. You've got to let it flow. You can't put up these barriers. So Sozan says, neither this nor that. Don't make distinctions. The moment that you make a distinction, you're fragmented, you're divided. It is human being state. We who say, this is opposite that. You know, it's like the student said one day to his teacher, you know, if a million objects come to you, and they do, look at the 10,000 things that come to you, what do you do? The 10,000 things come to you. What do you do? And this teacher very neatly says to him, a green article is not yellow. A long thing is not short. Each manages his own fate. Why should I interfere? Your mind won't let you do that, huh? Green and yellow are polarities. You know the circle of that the Chinese have of yin and yang. It's half black and half white. And the white is moving into the black. The black is moving into the white. And each one has a little dot. The black has a little dot of white. And the white has a little black of dot. You're never without either. There is this fluidity of one that moves into the other and the other. So the whole Tai Chi, which we ought to have Bob Cohen come up here and demonstrate, I may have forgotten. Enantiodromius, they call it, you know, the flowing in and out. Well, it woke him up a little anyway. I guess the old lady standing up here. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind. And old Chuang Tzu, you know, he said, easy is right. Lao Tzu says, misery, alas, rests on happiness. Happiness, alas, underlies misery. But who foresees the catastrophe? It will not be prevented. What is ordinary becomes again extraordinary. What is good again becomes propitious. And this bewilders people, and it happens constantly since times immemorial. See, we haven't changed very much in, these many years. We're still being confused with our mind in our choosing. Yeah. The great way is not difficult. The great way is easy. How can it be difficult? The trees follow it. Are they smarter than you? Rivers follow it. Rocks follow it. Birds fly in it. Fish swim in it. Bumblebees fly in it. Although according to the second law of aerodynamics, this is impossible. Yeah. We make things so difficult with our preferences. Love is easy. Hate is easy. The problem in here, because they flow in and out, the problem is our clinging to one or the other. You know, people want to be very spiritual, so they say, I will only love. Oh, love is all I know. It surrounds me. I will give only love. I will not hate. You know. It's like saying, I will only breathe in. Well, you try it. Huh? I will not breathe out. Huh? You know, there's such a thing as a balance in this flowing and breathing out. One gives, breathing in, one takes. You know, these are life processes. Remember them about yourself. And then you flow like life flows. You exhale and you inhale. And you give and you take. And when you're giving, give more, give more. So more can be given to you. And when a gift is offered, you take it. So the person giving, you know, has a chance to give more. Except in some circumstances. You know, there are times to remember when someone gives you a gift and you don't accept it. To whom does the gift belong? Yeah. But, you know, also, don't hoard. Don't be a miser. If you only inhaled, you wouldn't last very long. No. And when you eat, you know, you don't keep the food that you ingested with you for all time from then on out, even though it tasted good when you ate it. You know, keeping the food would be miserly. And we call it constipation. It's miserliness, huh? See? And then there are people who are, you know, they talk all the time. Blah, 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 blah. You know, chattering mind. And the mouth goes, it's in gear with it, you know. They're not saying anything, they're just, blah, 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 you know. And it's called diarrhea of the mind. And then there are people who are in their emotional state. Some of them are constipated and some of them have diarrhea. There's no balance there. They swing from one end to the other. And he says, you know, have no preferences. Yellow is yellow and green is green. What's it to you? You know? When the for and against attitudes are absent, you allow. You're not clinging. But this thing is going, this phonograph record in here is going. And it's pretty much like a phonograph record. If you keep track of it, why, you'd see that it repeats. And repeats and repeats. This chattering that goes on here says, well, you know, I've got to be for and against. I've got to have a preference. If I don't have a preference, it's dangerous. You know, you become like an animal if you don't have preferences. Raise your sights a little. Don't keep them glued on the ground. Just become aware. Which you cannot do if you're clinging either to for or against. Become aware. Tree is choiceless, but it's unconscious. You be choiceless and conscious. You know? Then you can say, I am conscious. What joy, huh? I am conscious. Be aware that you are not choosing. Be aware that you are not clinging. That's discipline, huh? Through it, you will be aware of a very profound peace. However, choosing seems to give color to our lives. It causes excitement. It causes enthusiasm. You know, emotions arise. Waves all over the place, huh? So that the ocean is obscure. And through this cloud, you know, color, we can't see clearly. It's all disguised. Let us say, for instance, that you meet someone and you're very attracted to that person. Something very peculiar happens. You begin to see things which are not present. You color the situation. No woman in the world is as beautiful as a man thinks she is. No way. But he meets her and he has this dream girl in mind. And he projects this dream girl on the real girl. And now her function is, she's a screen for his dream girl. He didn't see her at all. Just his dream girl. She has nothing to do with what you're projecting. You're not being fair to her. You blame her for not acting like your dream girl. And it's the same the other way around. She meets a man, she likes him, and she projects onto him her ideal man, the one she's got in her head, huh? And she meets a man and doesn't like him, and she projects something that is hidden in her. You know, and our monk, his wife said to him, Gesundheit. The monk's wife, our little monk's wife, said to him one day, you don't love me. You don't love me as much as you loved me before we were married. You don't love me as much as when you were romancing me. And he looked at her and he says, well, darling, don't pay too much attention to what I said then. That was just campaign propaganda. I have forgotten what you said. Now you forget what I said, and let us just be real. Yeah? How can anybody adjust to your dream? That's impossible. Huh? No one can be a screen for you forever. No. Don't expect it. Yeah, be mature enough not to expect it, you know, to see what the situation is. Yeah. When there is no preference, then the eyes are clear. Consciousness itself has this extreme clarity. And then in this clarity, existence reveals itself to you. And that reality is a truth. It is inscribed on a believing heart. Having seen, now we can believe. The real hasn't changed, no matter what you project on it. It can't be changed. Only our dreams are shattered. And it's our own fault. This movement from happiness to misery and from misery to elation and back again, you know, back and forth. Surely we can see this thing by now. No one is here to fulfill your dreams. Everyone is here to fulfill their own destiny. Don't expect it of them. You don't even expect it of yourself. Why do you project it on somebody else? If you wish to see the truth, and certainly that's really what you want to see, isn't it? The truth. Yeah. Then hold no opinion for or against. The struggle of what one likes and what one dislikes is the disease of the mind. Well, you know, when one first looks at this, difficult, Well, if I have no preferences, what will happen to my beliefs? What will happen to my way of life? What will happen to my religion? Maybe they're a burden. Let your beliefs be free of you. Then you can be free of them. How can one be liberated hanging on to one's burdens? One simply has to open the mind and understand. Understand what comes from the heart, from a believing heart, so you can let the mental heart beliefs go, Suzanne, in this way, with this Shinjin Mei, is giving you very great medicine. You know, he's not suggesting what to do. He simply says again and again and again, in all of this thing, don't choose. Understand. Understand this disease of preference. With all you're getting. With all you're getting, get understanding. So said Solomon. You know, in the Book of Wisdom. Understanding becomes the freeing principle. But then you can just laugh. You see, it's in a situation you should be for, you should be against. You see both sides, and you're not on both sides, and you're not in the middle. You just see the thing. And this insight rises, and you just say, this. And then you have a cup of tea. Right? Right. Very important. You know, when we sit, it's called, you know, an effortless effort. You don't make an effort to be for something when you're sitting. And you don't make an effort to be against something when you're sitting. Oh, I mustn't allow this into my mind. You know, I'm against this. Or it's against my nature, or it's against. And I want to be on the great way, and now I'm for the great way, and so this process that we have of, being for and being against, we bring it into all our situations. Just sit. Have no preferences. Just sit. When you just sit, you're open for it. If you're clinging to the for or clinging to the against, whose servant are you? See, the little flame has got a shadow. Look at it. Right up along with it. Interesting. All of that wax is melting except that one side. I wonder what happened there. Interesting, And now, may the peace and the power that passeth all understanding hold us and keep us in the love of the Christed consciousness while we are seemingly separate one from another. And I do thank you very much.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.